Oh, look at that. I knew something about a punk band.
Just some old fat drunk dudes jumping up and down.
This tree just planted itself right on top of the cement.
I did watch a YouTube video today.
My dad mashed potatoed
of
Enema
Chris
of the
Carrabba.
Aaron doesn't know who Chris Carrabba is. It's so good. That's great.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the Punk Tree. Glad you're listening. Just checking in here with Mike and Aaron. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Pretty good. We're still in the quarantine neverland.
Stuck at home all day, every day.
Yeah. We actually, the other night, we watched a movie in the backyard. We watched Hook. And I had not seen Hook in a really long time. And it was fantastic.
Like the one with Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah. Yeah. And you forget that it's Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
He's good.
Mm-hmm. He's really good. Yeah.
Right. How about you? Or anything new?
No. I mean, we started working on how we're going to get school going again today. So that was real fun, sitting in online meetings all morning.
Hashtag same.
Hashtag same.
Wow. Yeah, I did that as well. I didn't
what a
hashtag
coincidence.
It. I prefer hash browns to hashtags.
Ooh, hash browns are good.
I think any form of fried potatoes I prefer.
All right, well, how about music, you guys? What have you been listening to lately? Either today or just in the last week? What's on the playlist?
Oh, Death by Stereo has been filling my speakers and earphones since like January because you know, Slabbertory does the Slabby Holidays every Christmas, and this year it was supposed to be Ignite and Pulley, and I was real excited, especially since that would be the last time I would be able to get to see Ignite because they had announced they were breaking up, and then they broke up right before the show, but Death by Stereo filled in and it was great. It was the first time that I had seen Death by Stereo since like 2003. And
when was that show?
That was end of December. It was like December 27th.
Oh, back when we were allowed to leave our houses?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that.
Like I said, this has been since January. Anyways, yeah, they were so good. And I remembered why I liked them so much that they're playing in Hollywood like 3 weeks later. So I drove up there and saw them with a buddy of mine, John, who I grew up with. And yeah, so ever since then, I've just been like probably 70% of the music I've listened to has been Death by Stereo.
Wow.
How about you, Mike? What have you been listening to this week?
This week, so a few weeks ago, we, Jesse and I, our band that we're in, we shared our top 10 albums of the last decade, which I think is something we will probably do on here at some point. We'll share some of our best albums, favorite albums. I sort of started re-listening to a lot of Propagandhi in the last maybe 6 months to a year, something like that. And I loved Victory Lap, but I've been listening to Supporting Cast a lot because I felt like I got that album and I listened to it and I liked it, but it was one of those like I'm listening to records and snippets on my way to work and not doing the like thing where I used to always like get an album, open it up, open the lyrics, and I would listen to the entire album while I was reading the lyrics in order. And I think streaming has kind of like taken that away a bit, or I lost the practice of like pulling out CD, you know, inserts and like reading along. And so like I found myself like one of the reasons I love that band is I really love lyricism and I kind of like glossed over it. And so I've been back in just like repeat listening to it a bunch. listening on vinyl, actually, which is like, there's something about that tactile, like pull the record out and I put it on and I'm going to listen to one side. And so I'm only going to get like five songs. That's all I'm going to hear. I'm probably going to put it on repeat a couple of times and I'm really going to like let it absorb. So nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Propagandhi wasn't a band that like I particularly followed throughout the years, but when I was just over at your place, I don't know, I was going to say a couple months, but honestly it was probably 6 months ago. Maybe.
I think it was around Christmas time.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, like you put on, I think the first thing you put on was Victory Lap, and it might have been the first track, but I was just, my eyes were just like, what? This sounds incredible. Like, this is right up my alley. I love this. Say not all cops, say not all men. Yeah, you insist it's only 99%. There's nothing new for you to learn. Okay, sit back, relax, you watch it all burn. Colossal waste of energy, talent upon the talent, and freedom upon the free. This whole damn beautiful life wasted on you.
I was gonna say, there have been, I didn't really get to appreciate probably until maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and really, like, you know, when all my friends were listening to them back in the day, like, I wasn't really paying attention to lyrics so much. I'm talking when I was like 16 17, but you know, as I got older and I really understood what they were talking about, meant a whole lot more to me, and I really appreciate that band now. Just like Mike was saying, the lyricism is very important.
As far as what I've been listening to lately, a couple of things came to mind. First of all, like, just since we've been stuck at home, I kind of gave my daughter reign of my music library. So like, I use a ton of iTunes and like iTunes Match. So like, any device I've got that's Apple product has my whole library in it. And so she knows how to like find stuff that she likes. And so she's got like a little Bluetooth speaker that she's playing with outside. And so one of the things that she's been playing a ton is actually The Almost. For some reason, like, that's just something that she's attached herself to, and like, she just was playing it all day yesterday. And honestly, compared to other stuff she listens to, like kids bop, like I'll definitely prefer when she's listening to my library, we'll put it that way.
So you've been listening to a lot of what your daughter has been choosing for you to listen to from your own library.
Yeah, it's not always great, but it is kind of nice just to like hand it over and just like,
yeah,
you know, let her feel like she's gets to make her decisions. And so one of the main things that she chooses that I can go along with is The Almost. I think first time she ever listened to it, we were like watching music videos on mm-hmm. YouTube, and she just like was drawn to it. And I think she might have had like a little crush on the singer. she's only seven. I think there's just a little bit of interest like that.
We had a little thing that, you know,
anyway, so
we are in the,
so that's one thing. But
oh, go ahead, Jesse.
Oh no. So that's like one thing that came to mind, like what I've been listening to lately, but then also like what I've been choosing, like if I'm playing music while I'm working or whatever. I've been listening to Too Bad Eugene a bunch the last few months, and I'm really glad to have done that, because I like them. They're fantastic. It's do you know Too Bad Eugene, Aaron? They were like They started out on what was that record? The Mike Rock Rivera's City record Records. Label. Yeah, Rock City Records. He was one of the. They were one of the first bands that he produced, other than his own band, and but they made one record on Rock City Records with Mike Rivera, and then they put just a second album out on Tooth and Nail. Actually, a few years later, they were really different records, even. But I don't know if you knew this, the guys from Too Bad Eugene, Adam and Andy, were the two of the guys from Craig's brother. Remember Craig's brother? Did you ever see him?
Yes. Yes. Which actually is connected to my kid's music story that just happened, because we're in the throes of the coronavirus thing and we're all at home. And a fairly well-known songwriter actually died from coronavirus last week. I don't know if you know this, but he is the writer of my son's favorite song, actually. Made very popular by Joan Jett.
What is your son's favorite song?
Made popular by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, I Love Rock and Roll, written by Alan Merrill. And actually, Alan Merrill died because of complications due to COVID-19. My son doesn't know the Joan Jett version of it. He knows the Goaty Hook version of I Love Rock and Roll.
Nice.
But that was probably the first same song that either of my kids like would request for us to play.
You know, I could totally relate. That's actually one of the songs that's on Harlow's playlist. She loves that song too, and it is even the Goaty Hook version. Anyway, so those were the couple of things that came to mind for what I've been listening to lately. We've heard from each of you guys. We should probably get into what we are going to be talking about today, which is shows. Getting into best shows, favorite shows, who have you seen, best show you've ever seen. So we should hop right in. How about you, Aaron? Do you have a favorite or best show you've ever been to?
That is hard, but there's a couple that stand out, and I'm sure a lot of people will contend that we're talking about punk and I'm mentioning these shows, but I saw, let's see here, Alkaline Trio, Gaslight Anthem, Thrice, and Rise Against at Viejas Arena at SDSU, and every single one of those bands could be headlining bands. So having them all in that lineup was like huge. And every single one of them did an amazing job. You guys have both seen Thrice and Rise Against, right? They always put on a good show. Like even when, because Mike and I have had discussions about when Thrice is touring an album, it is a little bit different than when they're just touring. And you know, that it seems more rehearsed and robust, but even when they're not doing that, like even when I saw them at the Warped Tour, like they're just an amazing band. Like you could almost put on a CD and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between that and their live show. So that is one of the ones that stands out to me just because, you know, one, there were, you know, five really good bands playing together, and then every single one of them put on such a great show that night.
How long ago was that?
That was 2008, and I don't think the entire tour was like that. It was Thrice, I don't think, was supposed to be on that tour. They jumped in the last minute, which was maybe not last minute. It was like a couple months before, and I could be wrong about that, but I remember it not being like the original lineup on that tour, because originally, like, we got the tickets to see Rise Against because they were the headliner, and that was kind of like, well, that was the headliner. we didn't think Thrice was going to be there. So it was a huge surprise when they added him to it.
How about you, Jesse? Do you have one in your mind?
Yeah, the one show that comes to mind, like, immediately is Manchester Orchestra, specifically when they were touring the Hope record. I remember even just, like, right after the show, just walking away.
Oh, my gosh,
like,
yeah.
I think I've never enjoyed listening to live music as much as the last hour and a half. It was just phenomenal. I've seen Manchester Orchestra a ton of times. Like, they're a pretty big rock sound, but when they stripped down for that Hope record, which I love the whole record, and then just the presentation when we went and saw them, that's the first thing that comes to mind as far as like best or favorite show. I've got other shows I've been to that I can definitely say that were fantastic. In fact, another one that comes to mind was when Manchester Orchestra was touring with Thrice. And as much as I love both of those bands, they're each in my top five or top 10 favorite bands of all time. And the fact that on the same bill, two bands that I have that highly regarded, just makes it kind of stand out. It's not very often that multiple favorite bands are actually touring together. So that's a second one that at least comes to mind.
Yeah, I was with you about both of those shows, I think. But that Manchester Hope Tour show was at like a small, I think it was at the Troubadour.
It was a Troubadour in Hollywood, yeah.
And it's small. It's old school, you know, LA club style. And the fact that it was so small, I think the show sold out in like a day. It was quick. And you're just all, you know, you're crammed in because the capacity is the capacity of a concert where everybody's like densely in the space, but it's a broken down set. So nobody's going nuts. You know, like most shows that we might go to, there's people jumping around and moshing and stuff. It was just kind of, it was very different. You're in a sticky floor.
It was definitely very different.
Famous club, you know.
What do you mean by broken down set?
Okay, so Manchester Orchestra put out an album in like 2017 called Cope, which was, it was a pretty traditional sound for them. Was it 2017 or 16? Somewhere in that range, sure. Right? Anyways, it was a pretty traditional sound for them, you know, big guitars, driving melodic vocals, you know, just pretty straightforward rock. But they took the exact same songs and they re-recorded them, completely different style. Way more keys, way more synth type stuff. If there's guitars, it's going to be like acoustic sounding guitars. And so, I mean, bands do that occasionally. They'll do remixes or reimagined tracks where it's, you know, familiar songs, but just completely different instrumentation and presentation. And so we actually went to the Cope tour as well. And like, we saw them, great. But there's just something that was super special about the Hope record as well as the presentation when they toured it.
You want to feel old? Cope was in 2014.
Everything
is twice as long ago. Saying, like,
everything is twice as long ago as I think. Mm-hmm. Man, which is why when I was like, oh, when you showed me Propagandhi, I was like, oh, it was probably because I've started to self-correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I've started noticing like, oh, it must have been a couple years ago. No, it was 5 years ago. I started to self-correct and just assume it was further ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you actually like, you touched on something there. There's a big difference between those two shows you guys talked about. And I think there is a difference between, for me at least, between show going culture and like going to a concert.
Yeah.
You know, like I think Aaron, what you're talking about is more of like a concert. It's a massive arena.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, lots of hype. Radio stations are even pushing it locally. that kind of like seating and all that stuff. And then there's like the show stuff, which goes back to being, you know, a middle schooler for me, going to see bands, sometimes in a backyard with, you know, seven people. I remember playing a show when I was in a band in middle school in my front yard on my front porch as the stage with like, you know, 25 youth group kids standing in my front yard while we're playing. And like that sort of scene, and we'll talk about maybe bands we used to be a part of and be around a lot later on another time, but a venue we used to go to and we used to play at actually pretty regularly was the Epicenter, which was in San Diego, Mira Mesa in San Diego. And it was like a community center that was converted into like a concert hall at night, but during the day it was like an after school program place. But they would get these, like, it had a punk rock scene vibe, and they would get these bands that people really wanted to see. And so every like Friday and Saturday, you could drive. I'm from a couple hours away from San Diego, but you can come to San Diego, and it was like packed house during those like mid 90s, late 90s, like during that era. And so we used to go there a lot. And a show that just comes to mind, and it's not like musically the best show, it's not necessarily my favorite bands or anything like that, but I think there's like a nostalgia to it for me, is when I was in college. So we're going like really early, like 2001, something like that, 2002. And we mentioned this band when we were talking a bit ago. I saw the headliner of the show was Longfellow, which was a band I really, really liked from Orange County. And a band that I had actually gotten to play with before, the band Dogwood, which was a Tooth and Nail band, we actually know the guy who was the drummer of that band. They actually released some music in the last couple of years. I didn't realize that, but they did.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it the last couple of years, or was it
2017? Because I'm trying to see if we can get the guy to jump on the podcast with us. So, but the venue is just like, it's just like that sticky floor thing again. Like, you know, Jesse and I have played shows there, a show there together too. But you know, there's like these rafters, and like, you know, guys from the band are climbing up on the rafters like during the show, swinging off of them and landing on the crowd, and it's total mayhem. And it's like that era of like post-punk, you know, Longfellow was maybe like closer to original punk rock, but definitely a little bit poppy. Dogwood was like, and Longfellow was like a straight up like punk band in the scene. Dogwood was coming from like the Christian punk rock like side of things, but happened to be sharing a bill with them, and everybody knew the song. So it's like that, like everybody's singing along and jumping around, and I don't know, it was a blast. And it was kind of fun because I was like a little older. And so it was one of the first shows I remember where like I didn't live at home anymore. You know, I'm like deciding to go do this on my own. I'm meeting some friends from high school and stuff again together to see some bands that we used to go see together. So yeah, it was a good time. So when I was talking about the difference between shows and concerts, so you guys were like like nodding your head with me, like,
yeah,
like there is a difference, right?
Right. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about that because it is it's very interesting, because you can have the exact same bands playing in two different venues and it's like an entirely different show, you know? So like in 2003, I saw Death by Stereo with Avenged Sevenfold and AFI at UC Irvine at their like big mega arena, and that was cool. And there's like something about the energy in a arena like that. But then I've now seen them in the past 4 months twice in venues that had a capacity of like, what's Brick by Brick? Like 300?
Something like that.
Yeah. So where like you run into the band outside of the venue, like there's no security at the front door. Like you can see everything from anywhere in the entire venue. You can see everything that's going on the stage. You can actually make eye contact with the band members. And there's that like intimacy. There's like that shared feeling of like, this is something special with those 300 people in that room versus in an arena. You have like, you know, 10,000 people who like the music, but are just there to have a good time. Doesn't mean much to them. There's like something about that connection, those intimate venues that I really love. And there was a period for like 10 years where I did not go to a show like that until probably, was that 2018 was the first show I'd gone to like that in a long time. And I remembered very quickly why I really loved that. Places like the Soda Bar and Casbah, the small places on Sunset Boulevard, like the Viper Room and the Roxy and the Whiskey.
You know that Brick by Brick is run by Nick from As I Lay Dying? You ever seen him there?
Yeah, I bought a beer from him.
Yeah.
Cool spot. Yeah. I mean, those were... I remember some other clubs in San Diego that aren't around anymore. Club Zainth was a place we used to go. It was out east a bit. Up in Orange County, we used to go to Chain Reaction, Glass House. Yeah, I mean, there is something that, and it's like, I think that now it's just like there's been such a recession in live music that a lot of those places are just not around anymore. I mean, we still play music sometimes, and so we still see some of those places that have something going on, like San Diego. The Ruby Room is now the Murrow, where we tend to hang out there every few months at least. But yeah, I mean, I worry that that's like kind of faded. I think an interesting thing to talk about at some point is just like, what are the, you know, we're going to talk a lot on this podcast about the like teenage version of ourselves. And sort of that formative and sending out to what we listen to now and how things have changed. But I know there's like, I know that like the Lemon Grove punk scene in San Diego is a thing. There's a bunch of bands that do a lot of backyard shows there. And that thing is still very much alive with high schoolers. Just like roaming from backyard to backyard. And there's like a taco shop out there that puts on shows inside the taco shop. It's like punk rock bands and tacos. Which sounds like something maybe we should do a live show from there. That would be great. That would
be, I really
like
that idea.
Amazing.
Well, everyone shared their favorite or best show they've been to. What about the worst? Is that a harder question or an easier question?
Are we trying to put it in the same vein? Like, is it in like going to see bands we really hoped were going to be good? Or would you count like, you know, going to like Taylor Swift with your wife?
No, that doesn't count. No.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's a concert though. That's not a show. And by the way, I actually found that kind of fascinating, is like trying to define the difference between a concert and a show.
Yeah, I think so too. There's some danger here because I think like some of the worst shows I've ever seen were from like my friends' bands. if I honestly am trying to like, this is the worst, and here I am, because I mean, odds are the shows where you like bought a ticket to see the band you wanted to see, it probably wasn't like terrible, maybe it was, but probably wasn't terrible. It just wasn't like what you expected. They were off versus like someone you did not want to see at all and you're forced to go, and they were even off of the terrible that you did not want to experience.
Well, let's not count for this particular question. Don't count things that you were not intend. I don't know, don't count when you went and saw Taylor Swift.
Yeah, let's say no Taylor Swift and no Friends bands.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds fair.
All right. Why don't you go first, Aaron? What comes to mind for your very worst show experience?
Okay, so much like Mike, I grew up in an area that bands did not come to. So you had to drive a minimum of 2 hours to see anybody.
I feel that.
We would go to any show just because, like, it was a desperate situation. So one Christmas break, I think when I was a junior in high school, in November, we looked at the Chain Reaction bill during Christmas break, and we're like, the only band that looks or is punk, looks like something I want to see, is the Orange Conspiracy. So, and I don't know if we bought tickets back then, doesn't matter. Anyways, the time comes up, and like days before this, we all get sick, like terribly sick, but we're going anyways because we're 16 year olds that live in Ridgecrest, California. This is like our chance.
Yeah.
So we get in the car, and from Ridgecrest to Anaheim is like 2.5-3 hours. By the time we get to Mojave, which is about 40 minutes away from Ridgecrest, our buddy's van gets a flat tire, I think. No, his car starts shooting black smoke out of the tailpipe. So we stop in Mojave, find an auto shop, and they're like, oh, you just have too much oil and it's ridiculously dirty. Because all he would do is put a little more oil in his car every couple of months. So we leave it there and walk across the street to Wendy's, I think. And I go order my food. And I'm so sick, like in the car, I was laying in the back seat of the car, like in and out of consciousness. So I order my food, walk over to the table. And as soon as I sit down, I literally like black out and my head falls on the table. And I'm like just in that position for like 3 minutes until my friend comes over and wakes me up. He doesn't really realize that I just kind of blacked out. But you know, I'm pushing through because I have to. And so we get to Anaheim and we find a hotel. We get there like, I don't know, 2 hours prior to the show. So me and my buddy, we just like pass out on the floor of this hotel until the show starts. Walk over to Chain Reaction. And like, I think we were sitting in the back of the venue the entire time, just like hating the decision that we had made and like, just wanting this show to be over. Because we were so sick, could barely stay awake, and the bands were terrible. So like, we were not the only people in this place that wanted these guys to stop playing. I don't really know why we didn't just walk out. I know why we didn't, because, you know, we're desperate to see a show. But I remember at one point, like, the singer from the Orange Conspiracy was like, "You guys having a good time? You want to hear one more?" And like the crowd overwhelmingly was just like, "No." And so they played their one more song and the show was over.
Jeez, that would be so rough. That would be so rough to literally ask that question and the crowd overwhelmingly says no. That would be bad.
How about you, Jesse? Do you have a just like, man, it was not a good time show?
No, for me, mine wasn't necessarily that it wasn't a good time. This one actually just have a nice connection. It's, actually was at Brick by Brick. It was probably a couple of years ago. And I went to see Richie Kotzen. And, I mean, I enjoy Richie Kotzen. He was formerly in Poison. Not that I was ever into Poison or even then, but I definitely listened to Winery Dogs and some of his solo stuff, but went to go see him at at Brick by Brick, and the opening bands were fine. The venue's fine. Everything's cool. But, like, it comes time for him to go on, and he's not coming on stage. I don't know what he was doing, but he wouldn't come in.
I know what he was doing.
Oh, he was definitely still in his tour bus. What was that he was doing? I wasn't in the tour drugs. Bus.
I feel pretty certain that he was doing drugs.
Yes. Based on his demeanor, when he did finally come out on stage, I don't know, 20 minutes late. he had sort of that look, that appearance, that's what he was doing. But honestly, he still sounded great. I like Richie Kotzen's voice. He's a fantastic guitar player. I really enjoy it. But none of that actually went poorly because of him starting out late. But just the attitude he had of just like, I don't give a crap about this audience. I'm just going to come on stage as late as I want. I'll just hide in my tour bus. I don't know. It just felt like he had no respect for the audience. Like these people are literally here to see you, man. Like, don't be a douche. Like, and yeah, you're famous, but I don't know. No excuse, man. Like, be cool.
I was struggling to try and come up with one, and I've been thinking through like bad musical show experiences, bad, like, you know, I had a couple drinks too many, bad show experience, or you know, something went wrong, or some band like canceled. Like, all of those things have happened, I feel like, in show experiences. But you just reminded me, Jesse, of maybe it's the worst for a few reasons, and it just got worser while it was happening. And it was at Cane's, which used to be a venue down on Mission Beach in San Diego. Yeah, it's gone. It's been gone for a long time, I think, like 10 years. Even like played music there once, but I went there and it's like, here we go. And we'll get into embarrassing stories at some point here, but I went there to see Dashboard Confessional. I was a really big Further Seems Forever fan. I still am a very big Further Seems Forever fan. And, Chris Carrabba had split off.
Wait, yeah. Who? Right.
And,
Who is that?
He was the singer for Further Seems Forever, and then he played the saxophone in Dashboard Confessional.
That's right. It's exactly correct.
That's right, Aaron. You did your research. So
he also is an alcoholic, at least seemingly an alcoholic. And so I go to Cane's, and I think I kind of got wrapped into going with just some friends, you know, and it was kind of like, oh, this is happening. It's fine. I wasn't super into it, but it was fine. And at the time, especially, I was not super into it. And I was like, I didn't like him because I was a big Further Seems Forever fan. And he was the guy who kind of screwed everything up at the time. And so, you know, we get a bunch of people from the dorm rooms, I guess, and we like head over there. And he was so plastered drunk that he wasn't making sense. And it was a stool on the stage. It was just a stool and him sitting on the stool by himself. And that was it. And it's a smallish venue. I don't know, maybe a couple hundred people or something fit in there. And he was awful. He was like musically awful. And then at one point he was still drinking, I remember, while the show was going on. And at one point he like could not go on. Like he couldn't perform anymore. And so somebody came out and asked him to leave the stage. Like somebody, his person or the bar or whatever it was, people came out and like said like, yo, you need to get off the stage. And he got in an argument and he's like yelling and cussing out the whoever it was on the stage in front of everybody. And it's already become like a joke and some people have already left and other people are just being entertained by the disaster. You know, this is before like smartphone world. This is before I don't even think we had cameras on phones back then. You know, but it would have been like a horrible like YouTube Snapchat moment for him. But yeah, and that was before he became like a super national touring dude. It was like right when he had left Further Seems Forever.
We should probably wrap up pretty soon. I just had another question for you guys though. So we got kind of best show, worst show. How about just like, what band have you seen like the most times?
Oh, that's good. I think I know my answer. Do you guys have your answer? I'm wondering if it's the same answer.
I kind of think it is.
I would think that my answer, or at least an answer I think is correct. I obviously don't have the actual data and stats here to know exactly.
You don't have a baseball card binder of all of your Ticketmaster stubs faded to black. All right, I'll go then. I think Aaron and I were nodding along with each other. I'm pretty sure that the band I've seen the most is Thrice. That might be challenged only by I did go to a lot of Tooth and Nail shows. And there's a good chance that like Slick Shoes or some other bands like that that were like kind of like Southern California Tooth and Nail era bands could possibly challenge it.
Aaron, is that definitely your answer as well?
Very similar. I'm pretty sure it's Thrice because same thing. I've seen Thrice in the last 2 months, and I think the first time I saw them was like 2003. And I want to say I've seen them on average at least once every 2 years since then. But it's possible that I've seen AFI more times because there was a 4-year period at the end of high school and then like the 2 years where I was really screwing off after high school that they were like almost the only band that I listened to. I saw them a bunch of times. I don't really remember how many times.
Yeah. So that's the second time you mentioned AFI. I actually had a funny AFI connection. So I was in a band in high school and I actually left for college. And so they got a new guitar player, a different drummer, whatever. It was still the same like core of guys, but they went on to be a different band and they ended up getting like a practice space in Berkeley. And I came home from college just on like, I don't know, Thanksgiving break or something. And we went to go to the practice space. And as it turns out, the band in the practice space right next door to us was AFI. Yeah, they were a little better than we were, I guess.
Did Davey Havoc have the hair, the Danzig going even when they're just practicing?
No.
That surprises me. He seems like the kind of guy who does not leave the house without his makeup done, his leather pants, and his hair done.
Okay, so band I've seen the most, pretty sure, same answer as you guys. It's most likely Thrice. However, just to kind of say the way Mike said it, I think if a band was going to be close, it might be Five Iron Frenzy.
Oh, really? took it ska.
I saw them at least once a year, if not twice, between the ages of like 11 and 18.
Wow. It must have been nice growing up in the city.
Oh, dude. That was definitely something I had going for me. Like, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area in the East Bay, but like even as a teenager, we had access to like multiple big cities within 30-minute driving distance, or BART, hop on BART, go to shows. In fact, that's what we did the most often, was we'd hop on BART.
You know, like we had the whole scene in Southern California, but Aaron and I were both just like inland. And so everything was popping off. Mostly, you know, the like San Diego was very much like a punk rock city. And then sort of like as punk rock split off, which is where this podcast is going to go, right? Like as punk rock split off into these other subgenres, Orange County was a really big place for that. Like that's where a lot of like branching happened. And so that was happening like right as we were graduating high school and stuff like that. All this stuff is sort of going down, but it almost felt just like slightly out of reach.
Oh yeah.
You know, and there was no internet. So even knowing that things were gonna happen, you had to be like on a street team or on a mailing list to get like the concert bills and stuff.
No, living in a big city, like super close to like San Francisco, like me and my buddies, in high school, we were going to shows once or twice a month. We'd go into the city to like the Fillmore or Slim's or Bottom of the Hill or even the Pound. And like, there were shows at those places that we wanted to see like multiple times a month. We were going into the city all the time.
And we would just have to set up our own. Like, there was this old, post office in El Centro, which was the closest town that was big, like 30,000 people. And it had been like closed down, and the arts council in the area was given the building. And so they had like a crappy gallery of like watercolor paintings in the front foyer area. And then behind it, there was like a room that was like half refurbished. And we went in and we literally like helped them clean out this room, and like they got a soundboard installed, and there was this really awesome stage that had not been a stage, but it was great. And it was called the Old Post Office Pavilion, the OPOP. And so like our solution was like, we can just bring shows to ourselves. And so I was in like the local band out there. There weren't a lot of bands, and we were one of the only bands around, and we would just like write to these record labels and bands that we really liked and ask them if they wanted to add this to their tour. If you're going to play in like, you know, San Diego, and then you're going to play in Phoenix, you could stop, you know, relatively halfway between and play another show. And so it was kind of awesome. You know, we never got like huge names, but we did get names like, you know, like Dogwood and Slick Shoes and bands like that. And sometimes we get to play with some of them. And sometimes, you know, they were really cool and they would even open, because they'd come and they'd play a show at like 6 o'clock on their way to Phoenix or something crazy, just to squeeze another show in and make a couple hundred bucks in gas money, you know? And there was nothing else going on out there. And so we would cram the place like packed full of kids, which was really a good time. Well, this has been great, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's funny. I bet if we talk to people anywhere, the stories of like going to little venues, big venues, going to shows, I think that this was like a very, like a transcendent experience for people, no matter where they grew up, of just like that feeling of being outside, waiting in line, getting into the place, getting a hand stamp or a bracelet or whatever it is. And no matter how bad the music was, trying our very best to at least pretend we had an amazing time. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the first full episode of The Punk Tree. We had a great time talking about shows, and we can't wait to share more conversations with you about great music and good times. We leave you on this episode with a local band from San Diego in the Lemon Grove punk scene. This is Lemon Grove Punks by PSO.
We are PSO. Don't care what you think, don't care what you know. This is our town.